Are your sales and marketing efforts focused on customer acquisition or customer retention? This quarter, inside of Proof to Product Labs, we've been focused on sales strategies with an eye towards customer retention, meaning how do we get our existing customers to buy more frequently and in higher volume? And how do we get them to refer their friends to purchase from our shop? Well, in October, I led a training on customer retention that included some eye-opening statistics about why it is so incredibly important to focus on keeping our existing customers happy. I also shared specific strategies for how to nurture those relationships and things that you can do to keep people coming back to buy more. Well, today's podcast episode folds nicely into this discussion topic. We pulled an excerpt from a past coffee chat that we host inside of Labs. So coffee chats are a really cool experience where members of our community come and share their knowledge, experiences, and what's working for them. They have areas of expertise outside of what they're doing in their business. And today's episode is an excerpt from a coffee chat with Jordan Kentress of A Good Day, where we talked about enhancing our online customer experience and the steps that customers take as they interact with us online. Today's episode is brought to you by our Proof to Product Labs program. If you are looking to streamline your product-based business and you're looking for coaching, community support, I want you to head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. Our vault of on-demand trainings, like this one you'll hear today, run deep. But the incredible community, the connections, collaborations are like no other spot on the internet. If you sell physical products, come join us. This space was intentionally built just for you. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. I'm on a mission to empower product-based business owners to confidently grow their revenue in their own way and at their own pace. Here at Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies, find inspiration, and action steps to help you start, streamline, and scale your product-based business. So grab your favorite notebook to take notes and let's get started. Let's define, what does customer journey, how do you define that and what does that look like for you?
Customer journeys, because I can talk and you don't have to talk. Customer journeys are basically kind of how a person interacts with your brand. It doesn't mean a purchase cycle. It means like a broader like life cycle. So how do they interact with your brand? That can include things like social, email, your website from like an e-commerce perspective, but what does the path look like from when they discover you to what is typically like a complete, so an interaction. So they, you know, sign up for your email list is one customer journey, you know, interacting with you on social is another one technically. So you can break it down really granularly, but then you can do it on a sales side. You know, how do they learn about you? Where do they interact with you? If they're learning about you from a buyer, like what does that kind of journey look like? And then you touch on what are the touch points within there. So how many steps is that? What is the end result? How do you measure that conversion? Those are the kind of things that I like to focus on. And then what you can also include in there is a pain point for that kind of end client. So, you know, are they, you know, inquiring about price? Do they have a need? So you can take a look at it in the way that you kind of structure your business. It really does depend. So for like people who do custom work, that journey is a different kind of need versus someone who is looking for funny birthday cards or tea towels for their kitchen. They're looking because they may want a cute tea towel. They're going to hit it up on Google. You're going to come up in the search results. They're going to get to your product page. Then they're going to get some answers there. And if they love it, they buy it. It meets all their needs. Or maybe price wasn't the right fit. So then you start to unpack, how do you find out how to improve those things? Sorry, I'm unloading a lot here.
No, I love this. I think that, well, I want to touch on two things you've mentioned here, but I like that you talked about the pain points and the needs of your customer and making that the crux of like what this journey looks like for them, right? But then I also like that you are talking about the before, the during, and the after of the whole sales process, right? Because
we talked about this a little bit with Myrna and also in the workbook this month of like, the customer journey really truly begins the first time they hear about us, right, Jordan? Like,
oh yeah,
that could be through a friend. It could be on a Facebook ad. That could be just seeing your
Instagram. It's actually before, in a way, because there's usually a need. So it's, I'm looking for a funny birthday card. They're not necessarily saying, I need a card from X company. It's, I'm looking for something. And then your company comes in that may fit that need. And then they go down that path with you. So the first interaction is typically there, but there's usually something before it that sparks that behavior.
Right. Yeah, the need or the pain point. Okay. So you mentioned a few different things. You mentioned the sales process, the email process. Like, what do you think is the most critical piece of, like, if people don't really have a mapped out customer journey, where should they start? Like, what's the first thing they should think about or do?
I mean, the majority of us want to make money. So I would probably talk on a purchase cycle and take a look at, you know, what is the journey from someone learning about my company to purchasing? So what does that look like? I would take a look at entry points could include things like, you know, search. It could include things like email if they're coming across or being emailed from like a referral. And it can also include things like social or potentially even a retailer. So there may be an instance where for all of us who are carried in stores, they find out about you because they're in a store and they love your work. And then they want to learn more about you and they want to buy more of your products that aren't available in that store. There are multiple entryways. To start very simple, I'd probably start with starting on your website. If you're going to map a very basic journey, you know, website is the starting point. And then where do they go from there?
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the fact that like a lot of people are putting like, you know, we want to cross, like on our website, we have all of our social media handles, right? Like we're always, I feel like we're always trying to drive people to different places. Do you think that muddies the water or do you think that helps them get to know us and build that like and trust? Like when they come to our website, we want them to do one thing. We want them to shop. We don't want to redirect them back out to social media or something. So, but at the same time, we want our sites to be informative.
Yeah, there's an element of kind of like brand building and like brand affinity that comes through and integrating in other spaces.
Yeah.
But when you're working through the mindset of a conversion, you want to make sure that that path is kind of unobstructed. So I wouldn't put your social media in your header on every page because they're likely gonna go and get distracted rather yeah. than here are my products, learn about me, you know, book me for my custom thing that I do.
Yeah. Like,
you want them to do those things and then social becomes part of your about and part of your footer or secondary content on pages.
Right.
You can incorporate things like reviews so that after they learn about them, then they can go get distracted by other spaces. You don't really want to drive them, even for things like testimonials. You don't want to put your testimonial before your action, typically, because they're going to go and, especially if it's on another website, get lost.
Yeah.
And then they're likely going to find something else, you know, go down a rabbit hole. It happens all the time. Any of us who are doing things online.
I know there's a balance between informative and then creating distractions, right? So I think, okay, so why don't you walk us through what your customer journey is? You do a lot of custom work with people. So why don't you, I like examples. I think it helps formulate what people are doing. Do you mind sharing an example of your like workflows or your customer, really it's customer journey, not a workflow, that like the pathway they take with you?
Yeah, there's a couple. So context, I do custom wedding stationery. That's kind of like my mindset. I have two kind of direct paths with most of my clients, three. The first one is kind of more organic. So people are, you know, I'm getting married, I'm looking for wedding invitations, and I come up in the search results because I've done a decent job at getting, you know, Toronto wedding invitations to come up. And people are coming across my site, and from there, they learn more about me and my process and see examples of a buttload of work. And then my thing is contact me to then start a conversation. That's kind of that kind of like organic journey. The other one is a referral. So a lot of my past clients or even a wedding planner or industry professionals are saying, go check out Jordan. He's amazing. Here's his social media. This is his work. They're coming in from social, then they're coming to my website. And from there, they're kind of already primed and the website has to do less work on selling me and my work because they've likely come across me in social. But then the main call to action is still contact. So from those kind of inquiries, it's more contact based. But I also do have a smaller retail side, and that journey is a bit more abstract. Those people are literally like funny birthday cards in Google and happen to come across them. And they're like looking at things like price point, is the card the thing that I'm looking for? And they'll either bounce or they buy, because my site's actually powered through Shopify.
Yeah.
So it's very easy from a conversion perspective, but the things that are barriers to them are price. So is the shipping the right thing? Is the card in a price that makes sense for me and what I'm willing to pay for it? Can I bundle it with other things? Those are the kind of things that people kind of start to wonder there.
You bring up an interesting point about hurdles in a customer journey and how, there's some obvious things that we can pinpoint, right? Like if the shipping price, if somebody, I was talking about this with a mastermind client earlier of like, one mug to get expedited shipping was $36. And it's like, that's a huge barrier. Nobody's going to do that, right? But she was using a print on demand company and that's just what it was. But so there's some obvious things like that that we can point to and say, okay, this is a problem. This is causing a kink in the customer journey. It's not making it easy for people. But what are some things that we may not realize are barriers for our customers as they go to purchase?
So sometimes it's actually like the way that we frame up our products. So labeling of sections on your website, you really want to think of it in really kind of clean and clear ways. Sometimes we want to get really creative and are like, it's part of my brand to call my cards things, for example, or something like that. And you're like, someone may not realize that that's what that label is. Whereas if they're looking for products or services or about X company, you want to think of it in really kind of clear ways. You can get really fun and cool inside of that page, but try and layer your structure to be really kind of transparent. You want people to understand what they're kind of getting into as they're kind of viewing your site navigation. That's a really big thing that a lot of people kind of trip up on, because either they get too in the weeds and they create too many areas. So if they're like in their navigation, they're like tea towels, cards, art prints, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. People can kind of get a little overwhelmed because they may not really realize all of the different things. And they kind of get distracted again into trying to figure out what the right path is for them. You could look at clustering it in, stationery and household goods, which might be a cleaner way of doing it, or products. So you want to think of those things in how you can kind of tell your story and set the stage for the customer through that kind of structure. The other thing is a lot of us don't really, because a lot of our businesses are smaller businesses, there are a lot of handmade, very personal touches. We don't always tell our story, and we're not Target and we're not the place that is selling all of those things. So telling your story is something that people find really valuable in a small business. So when they're doing like the shop local, shop handmade, those kind of promotions, people really gravitate towards those. So find ways of telling those stories. And when you don't, someone has no idea that it's literally you in your kitchen or living room doing those things. You don't have to necessarily say that, but it's, your home-based business. You're the person that they talk to on a daily basis. You're the one packaging all those orders, or you and a small team. Like, filling out those gaps are some of the reasons why your pricing may be different than other competitors of a nationally shipped big box brand.
Yeah.
So those are things that can help kind of jump over some of those barriers, because you're giving the context. Like for me, my stationery is very expensive, because I like to use a lot of really unique, weird materials that are not typical. So my price point for manufacturing is incredibly high in comparison to someone who is, printing invitations off of Staples, 90-pound cardstock. I'm like finding handmade wallpaper from Germany and printing invitations on that. And I'm like, the roll of paper is $400.
Right.
Invitation is going to be very expensive. But that's part of my story that I tell my clients, because then they get that understanding of, whoa, that's really expensive. But I'm like, FYI, some monk in a country is screen printing this thing. And that's why you're doing it. And your guests are going to get such a unique experience.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought this up, because I do think that is the storytelling, the education, the point of difference, explaining. I know that like our letterpress printers on the call, for example, like it's handmade. It's, you know, and articulating, or like Meg's on the call and she has worked really hard to like create a whole supply chain here in the United States. And that requires additional funding and money. And like, like there's a expense to that, or there's a premium. I guess that's the word I was looking for, a premium for that. So I appreciate you talking about that. One thing I want to go back on, though, that you talked about was like the categorizing of items, or like how we're structuring our website, or how we're talking about things. My kids' preschool is doing a raffle, or not a raffle, an auction right now. And they set up this whole auction, and all of their auction items start with basket number 37. And then on my phone, I can see like five characters after that to see what's in the basket. And so it's made me think about it from our standpoint with our products of like, how are people searching and how are people finding our products, and how are we, like, we may be categorizing things on our site or the back end of our thing, like for things that make sense for us, you know, but we wouldn't want to put our SKU number and like, what we want is like the details of what it is and how people are going to use it. And would you agree with that? Like,
definitely. You want to be thinking of titling, especially for a variety of reasons. One is SEO. Like from a search engine perspective, no one has any idea what, you know, MX1244 is in a title. Google's never going to come up with that.
Yeah. So
that's not going to help you in there. And that's your H1, so the title of your page, is what Google indexes as the main topic of what this page is about. So if you're like funny birthday card, Halloween witch, whatever, like that's something that could get indexed by Google. And that's what kind of denotes for someone to understand what they're going to be seeing next. Mm-hmm. It helps on the kind of top level look at a page. So if you're looking at birthday cards, that's one thing. Then they can kind of sort it that way, but then they get some context.
Yeah.
But then it's also outside of your site. When things get linked to it, when social sharing happens, you want that all to kind of translate, and not the internal business language that we use to structure all of our stuff gets carried forward. We don't want that, because no one has any idea what most of that is.
Right. Like, I'm not going to search my kid's preschool auction by basket number 39, you know, like I'm going to look for whatever Frozen thing, or I don't know, whatever, you know? And so I think we do need to kind of change our mindset. And then also the logistics of how we're talking about our products from a titling perspective, like you said, from a keyword and SEO perspective, like you mentioned, and Myrna mentioned on our training earlier this month, and down to the product descriptions, like we talked about with Perna, like several months ago, like these are all intertwined things, right? Okay. I know that you are like an SEO whiz, that this is something you've done for many years. I still like Myrna's presentation was fantastic. And I know we all learned a lot from that, but what else are you doing to like, what are some simple, like can do right now type of SEO tips and tricks that you would offer everybody?
So one thing that I did pretty early on in my like improvements on SEO was to look inside of my Google Analytics and see what people were searching to get to my website. That was a key indicator for me to understand how people perceived my products and, you know, were finding me, because that meant for me that I either needed to create more content, or the audience that was coming in is not the right audience. So if, you know, you don't specialize in like acrylic wedding invitations, that's actually one of my most indexed pages and one of the things that people come in on, even though that page is basically just talking about it. I get a lot of inquiries in that space because that's something that people are looking for. But for me, that was a really good indicator that I should be creating more content around that, because it's currently indexing well. And Google is saying, you know, people are coming in because they're seeing, hey, Jordan does acrylic wedding invitations, so I want this to be a resource that I'm going to be doing. Google ranks that well if people are coming in and staying on the page and then taking the next action.
Yeah.
If people are coming in through search and bouncing immediately. So they're leaving the page before they do anything. Google determines that as, you know, the page didn't meet their needs potentially. So they're not likely to keep giving that ranking. Your ranking can potentially go down the more people who come to your site through search and are bouncing before they take an action to go to another page or converting or those things, because Google's saying that that page is not meeting their needs anymore.
Okay. The Google Analytics with the keywords, I think, is really fascinating. And it was something I didn't understand before we did our rebrand to Proof of Product and rebuilt the website and everything like that. But that is a true goldmine of information, because those keywords, you can then put them in your product descriptions. You could, if you're blogging, I know some of you guys have blogs or other content pieces of your business, you can work that into that kind of content. But again, it gets tricky because you want to be making sure that you're attracting the right kind of people for the products that you want to be focused on. I mean, we don't want, if you're not doing acrylic wedding invitations, we don't want to make that a priority in terms of the SEO. But okay, so looking at Google Analytics and looking at the keywords and seeing where we can expand or where we can maybe like other areas that we want to kind of focus on. Would you say that's like?
Definitely. The other thing I would look at is, you know, competitors and, you know, bigger brands to see how they are structuring their content. So if someone like Target is, you know, calling it cards, and then in there, there's a category, funny birthday cards, they're likely getting ranked on those pages because they have a higher domain authority. And what that means is Google treats your domain as, you know, someone who is an expert in their field. And the higher your domain authority, it usually means you're seen as someone that is linked to more often and links to others more often. So someone like, if Katie were to link to a bunch of us, Katie has a higher domain authority because of her name in the industry. Take a win. because, you know, the industry might deem it as, you know, from a coaching perspective, Katie is such a coach, and she's linking to other businesses. So Google's, you know, linking out from those things. So they see that as, you know, an expert in that sense. Someone like a Style Me Pretty on the wedding blog side, like the blogs that are linking to you, give your domain higher ranking authority because you're being linked to by someone who is seen as, you know, a top person in the industry. So really high ranking blogs. That's why a lot of us are encouraged to submit to, you know, other places for, you know, holiday roundups and, you know, all those things. Getting your content out there is really important because you want to be linked to and link to other websites.
Yeah.
So if your website is essentially seen as someone who is sharing knowledge to their audience, so if you're like, here's my awesome, you know, funny cards, and here are some really cool funny socks that I don't sell from another maker and things like that, that gives your brand a good kind of like a good feeling from a client perspective, because they're like, hey, such and such a good day is really fun and I love their products and they're telling me really cool other products. So your client is likely going to come back to you because they see you as someone that they can draw inspiration from.
Right.
So it does build that kind of stickiness with the brand, but from a search perspective, it means that you are sharing the kind of wealth and giving it out to others. Well, hopefully they're linking back to you.
So this brings me to a point for all of you guys. If any of you are blogging and you're doing, let's say, gift guides for your blog, or, and remember what Myrna told us, like they're not scanning Instagram gift guides and stuff like that. So it would have to be something that's like kind of on your site. This is a really good opportunity for you to team up with other people inside of the Labs community that have similar but non-competing products, or, you know, just complementary things. Because if you can do a blog roundup and include different people, and then they do a blog roundup and include different people, it's gonna tell Google and the interwebs like, hey, these people are all like supporting each other and lifts everybody up too, which is good. Let's see. Jennifer had a question. She said, Jordan, when we are highlighted on other websites from a search perspective, should we put those links on our website? And if so, where?
Yes. It depends on what you want to do with it. So I'm currently in the process of redesigning my site, but I'm including a press section for all of my press features. I'm not putting it on the homepage because I don't want Like for me, I want you to contact me either to book my, you know, design services, you know, book custom wedding invitations, talk to me. I don't want you to go to Martha Stewart Weddings and then go find, you know, something else and find 1,000 other people who make wedding invitations that are different than mine or the same or whatever. We don't want to necessarily put that on the homepage. In those instances, you can include a, like a logo lockup that's, you know, I've been featured in these kind of industry publications, but don't link it there from your homepage. I would do it in a space that's either like about or press or something like that. That's a dedicated space that you can link people to so that it's an area you can drive to and you have a house for it on your site, but it's not going to distract your audience from trying to get to the point of conversion.
Yeah, that's a good point. We have a press page, and now that we're talking through this, I'm realizing that I have not done a very good job of including other podcasts that I've been on. We've done a great job of talking about our own stuff, but not necessarily interviews. And so thinking about, you know, if you guys are doing markets or trade shows where you're featured, like having that on a page of here's where we're at or featured on or out and about or, you know, out in the wild or like some sort of kind of like home page, like a landing page, not a home page. I just mean like a home on your website for that kind of stuff that's in the background. That could be a really good way to kind of cross-reference and build that SEO cloud basically.
Yeah. You're also, you know, you're building the relationship with the other websites. Cause you're like, I'm linking to you. Hopefully you're linking to me. Like those things are the things that we want to be doing.
Yeah.
So I've even seen it a lot of small businesses, like years back, I was really heavy into Etsy and I was doing custom jewelry, but I was in some like smaller communities where we would link to each other's stores and websites because then, you know, we're boosting each other. It's the idea of like a comment pod on Instagram. Yeah. Like these are my maker friends and I trust them and I endorse them. Like that goes really well from a community building perspective, A, from like a professional side, but as a client, I'm like, hey, I know this brand, this other brand that's being linked there. That's cool that they're friends. And I, you know, I like that. Or, hey, I didn't know that they had these kind of products. I like these products too. It's like a goodwill kind of all around.
Yeah. So we've talked about some SEO stuff. You've given your example of your customer journey with custom clients, the whole like organic versus referrals heading, like your goal is to get them on a call, because if you can get them on a call, you can find out more about them. You can sell them on your services and that leads to sales. On the retail side, you talked a little bit about, we talked a little bit about retail of like going from social or email or referrals to there to your website to then we want to make it as seamless as possible to get that. We want
like two or three clicks.
Yeah. We want to make it two or three clicks to get to what they need. On the wholesale side, I kind of view the wholesale side as like two separate paths. We've got the customer journey for people that are brand new to us that have not placed an order. And then we've got the customer journey for people that have placed an order and they need different things, right? Like just like on the retail side, if somebody's purchased from us and they know us, they need fewer steps to check out, right? On the wholesale side, it's either cold. So regardless of whether they're existing account or not, like it's either cold outreach, it's them seeing you somewhere on social media, it's them seeing you at shows or in directories, but then where do you send them? What's that next step? And that's usually to your resource page or your where you have your catalog and ways to buy from you, or it's sending them straight to your fair or some other place where they can order online, your own wholesale portal where they can purchase online. But guys, I guess my point is like, think about your particular business model and think of all of the steps it takes for your customer to get from just getting to know you or figuring out who you are and what you sell to the actual purchase point.
All right. I hope you enjoyed a sneak peek into what we do inside of Proof Your Product Labs. This coffee chat with Jordan Kentress of A Good Day was a crowd favorite. And coffee chats in general are just some of our best attended events inside of Labs because members get to share their knowledge, experience, and expertise with each other. Plus, we always like to leave Q&A time, connection, and collaboration time. So people really get to know each other well. Here at Proof Your Product, we truly believe that the more we share with one another, the faster our individual businesses will grow. And these types of events are a piece of that. If you want to learn more about Proof to Product Labs, please head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. That's prooftoproduct.com/labs. I also want to thank Jordan for generously sharing his knowledge with us. If you want to learn more from Jordan, go back and listen to episode 169 of Proof to Product, where Jordan shared more about his business journey and how he effectively creates a strong user experience for his customers. So again, that's episode 169 of Proof to Product. We'll include that link as well as all of Jordan's links in the show notes so you can go find him. Thank you so much for listening until the end. I'll be back next week with a new episode.